Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Fodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Otis.
And I'm Trevor McClanahan. We're going to talk a little bit about the Fed today. Just fundamentals of the energy market today, what crude's looking like. Pretty standard stuff for us at this point. But we had the Fed talking actually right now. Jerome Powell is in the midst of kind of giving us a little bit more of a path of what the next cycle is going to look like for rate cuts. They did do a quarter point cut today. That has been bolstering the market a lot here recently. Mm-hmm. What's your outlook here, Alex?
So today is September 17th when we're recording. I think it's in line with expectations, and truly the expectations are that rate cuts are going to come in, and just we're going to try and potentially over the longer term kind of try and inflate this debt away and perhaps carry a lot of the market. The market's been kind of ripping lately. Some other commodities have kind of gotten lifted a little bit more, like gold, some other things that are more of a store of value here. But overall, rate cuts are generally supportive for demand, but it's kind of a slower moving thing. So I think, you know, people tend to react initially when the decision is being made. But
yeah,
on the oil front, it's truly not going to right off the bat make a difference.
I think it's important to look at it from, like you said, just a longer view, you know, and looking at it from an inflationary standpoint, because right now we're seeing some really weak labor market figures showing there's, you know, more job losses and jobless claims out there right now than we've seen in the past couple of years. And that's going that takes priority over everything else when it comes to Federal Reserve. So, you know, even if inflation is scaling higher, if jobs numbers are weak, then we're going to see the Fed continue to take measures to, you know, continue to inflate the economy essentially. So, we've seen the 25 point cut today. I think they have another one priced in at in December for another quarter point cut. And that actually raised, we were looking at the Fed watch, metric on that. And it said, you know, there was a 70% chance as of yesterday of a December cut. Now it's all the way up to 96% basically overnight. So, that seems to be the path that the Fed is taking. Again, if the jobs market continues to, stay weak, that's going to be a pattern that we're going to continue to see. So, we could see a little bit more of an inflationary environment going forward. And then that obviously is going to bolster everything, you know, whether it's crude or energy or, you know, everything across the board.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of like, this is one of those things where you look at some of the larger assets than crude oil. So like equities and bond markets kind of sometimes will take the lead over crude oil, and yep. Commodities markets are kind of just brought along with it, especially in times of now where there hasn't been a kind of decisive direction on the crude oil market. There's a few things that are kind of drivers in the market currently. First off, I would say one of which is the overall expectation of a large surplus in the oil supply and demand outlook for the rest of 2025 and into 2026. So there are expectations that there's going to be a surplus of excess of 2 million barrels per day in Q3 and Q4 of 2025, and then kind of lightening a little bit in the middle of 2026. So it's kind of a gloomy picture for oil, but there have been some aspects of the market that have kind of prevented it from selling off substantially as of now. I think one of which throughout Q2, China was a huge buyer of crude oil at kind of lower prices and filling its stockpiles up. They still do have quite a bit of excess capacity, but I still think that we hadn't seen as large of a surplus in the start of this year. And so now we're kind of moving towards the that area of time or point in time in which the IEA, the EIA, and OPEC are all kind of expecting these surpluses, primarily due to the OPEC cuts being unwound. And so it's kind of hard to get outright bullish for a longer term point or for a longer time period at the current current level. But as we had Arlen on our last time, we're entering that harvest period. So we will see kind of an uptick in diesel demand. And then as we transition to the winter, we're going to start seeing some heating oil demand, propane demand as well. Those are kind of some of the driving factors. And recently, I'd say the market's been kind of refined products have been driving the market a little bit more so. So, and that's kind of been more the geopolitical factors that are kind of going on. Do you want to touch on a little bit what's happening there on kind of, the Russia-Ukraine conflict starting to take some relevance in the headlines again? So we are getting tired of the whole India refinery sanctions and sanctions on Iran. So now we're kind of going back to Ukraine, Russia.
Yeah, it's no longer flavor of the week, and the oil market is flavor of the month. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that one exhausted itself before that. It was kind of the Iranian situation with Israel. And then there was a whole slew of tariff stuff that was prior to that. So now the kind of the focus has been recently are the Russian refinery attacks by Ukraine. Ukraine has increased their drone production significantly as of recently. And then that's also allowing them to just make more strikes on Russian assets. And the biggest focus has been on the energy assets. That's been a pretty broad thing that's well known. And recently they've hit a significant amount of refinery capacity in Russia. The overall damage that's taking place on these refineries is unknown for the most part. We know that they're obviously striking them and hitting those and successfully hitting them without them being intercepted prior to, but we still don't really know the actual the outcome of how bad those refinery the destruction is and how fast Russian refineries have been able to come back online after being hit. So there is a lot of unknowns there, but that is something that Russia is going to keep close to their chest. And we've noticed that the crack spread on diesel especially has really compounded on itself. It's been raising a lot. The margins on diesel for refineries have increased a bunch. And that export market is just continuing to be very attractive. So domestically, we could continue to see exports on diesel stay strong. What was that? Did you happen to check the exports this morning?
I didn't see the exports this morning, but it was on the inventory side of things. I think this is where it's kind of interesting, was that there was a really large build in diesel inventories. I believe it was 4 million barrels.
Yeah.
And now the deficit to the 5-year seasonal average was at, I believe, 6 million barrels.
Okay. It,
compared to earlier in July, we were at a 31 million barrel deficit.
That's narrowing.
Yeah. So it is narrowed substantially, but right now we're kind of seeing the price kind of take the lead. So it's hard to dismiss that when that's kind of the highest frequency data point we have. So,
and the price is probably reflecting some of these headlines that we're seeing on these refinery attacks. So we, again, we don't really know quite yet whether that's going to take a huge effect or not. The export market will show some of those signs down the road. It's just it probably hasn't seeped in quite yet.
I think according to ICON, as of, I believe, like last week, there was a 200,000 barrel per day drop in exports out of Russia on the diesel front. So there, but like
you said, refined products,
okay. Diesel specifically. So we've seen a downtick in those exports, but it's export numbers are hard to really judge like on a week to week basis because they're just so noisy. So we kind of hesitate to say that that's, you know, truly a massive drop. It could be, you know, sometimes it's seasonal maintenance, sometimes demand increases in Russia and there's just kind of a swing adjustment in that diesel.
We like to look at the 4 week average on that. That's probably your best metric of finding that true number that makes the most sense as far as the what the current situation looks like. So one thing that to note as well is there's a lot of headlines as well showing that Ukraine has been able to start producing a new drone bomb. I assume that's what it is. And it's called the Flamingo. I'm not well informed on this, not a military guy by any means, but this has a higher payload. So if they are able to, you know, attack these refineries with this missile, then it will do a significantly more damage. One thing to note on that, though, is it will be easier to intercept considering it's just larger, and it probably would go slower, I assume, as well. So Russia might be able to intercept those easier. They're more expensive as well. So Ukraine will be a little bit more cautious on utilizing those. But if they are able to hit these refineries, it's going to do significantly more damage, and it's not going to just be, you know, a quick repair like they've been able to do with these smaller drone attacks that have been hitting recently. So that's another thing to monitor. And that will make a massive difference if they're successful in utilizing those on Russian energy assets. Do you want to talk a little bit more on OPEC?
Yeah, so OPEC, so we're in September, they are still bringing on these additional barrels, and they're set to bring on more barrels, so unwinding a 1.66 million barrel per day, or 1.6 million barrel unilateral production cut that has been in place, I believe. Honestly, now it's hard to track of when these were initially put on because they put on one and then they added to it and then they started unwinding. But there was a 2.2 million barrel voluntary cut that has been completely unwound. And then now they're on this 1.66 million barrel unwinding. So they're deciding in, or they have decided for October to bring back, I believe it was 166.
Yeah. So I think
100, I'm sorry, around 160.
Yeah. Somewhere in that. So the plan is for them to basically unwind that over a 12 month cycle. Mm-hmm. So whatever that rate is, but divided by 12, we'll see, you know, that's going to be the kind of the continued increasing, level that they're going to continue to go over this 12-month cycle. They may adjust it based off market conditions at the time. But overall, that's going to come back online, right? Mm-hmm. We kind of know that. So it hasn't it's been interesting, though. So ever since they've even kind of brought this idea back and seeped it into the market, the market's actually been supported by it. So I think what the expectation prior to this was they were going to bring it back faster than what they decided to do ultimately. So the expectation was a faster increase, hike in those productions than what they've actually came to do. So that's why we've seen, that's part of the reason why we've seen a little bit of support in crude here recently, you know, with along with the other factors that we kind of just discussed. So thought that was interesting. One other thing that we wanted to touch on was the decline rates on producers, the IEA's adjustments that they've made for how many times in a row now. So you want to touch on that?
Yeah. So of all the major data reporting agencies, there's I don't want to say an inherent bias, but there seems to be kind of overestimations and underestimations that are have been somewhat consistent. So OPEC puts out a outlook on supply and demand. They have tended to be a little bit overstated in their demand expectations for global oil. The IEA has tended to, and Trevor brought this to my attention, was that since 2008, they have every year declined, or every year been underestimated the expectation for global oil demand. So those are kind of two opposite sides of the spectrum. And then the EIA, not saying it is the most accurate, but tends to lie in between those. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of the gauges of the market of what we expect for supply and demand expectations. But the IEA recently has kind of somewhat changed its tune with some pressure from kind of the U.S. has kind of pressured them somewhat to kind of avoid the oil demand. They have been consistently stating that oil demand was going to tap out in like 2030 or even prior to that. And that has been just kind of a underestimation by a large margin. But recently we've seen kind of a piece of research that they came out in their most recent monthly report, and they did an assessment over, I believe it was 16,000 different production sites throughout the globe and assessed their decline rates. And when comparing this to 2010 survey, the decline rates are 40% higher than what they were in 2010. And just to put that into perspective, that means that without any additional expense into the production of oil and of global oil, it would be a reduction of 5.5 million barrels per day. So essentially their takeaway was that we need substantially more investment in the oil and gas sector, which is kind of a complete change of tune from what their previous months and monthly reports had been. So it's something interesting and kind of points to the fact of why, when you're seeing rig counts, I mean, this is actually kind of perplexing on the U.S. side of things. We haven't really seen that huge reduction in crude oil production, even with rigs dropping offline substantially.
It's actually marched higher since the beginning of August, which is always some noisy data as well. But it has been marching higher, which is kind of
and
odd.
And we've here stated kind of that the rate of growth is going to be reduced, which it has. But still, we're going to keep, they're kind of squeezing every last drop as they possibly can. But ultimately, the takeaway here is that the production of shale is extremely expensive and capital intensive due to some of these high aggressive decline rates. And so in order to kind of assess where crude oil production is in shale in the U.S., we're going to need to see more capital investments in U.S. production. And thus far, I believe we're coming in slightly lower as of 2025 than we were in 2024. So that's kind of a longer term story to play out, but it's a overarching story that needs to be kind of taken into account when you're analyzing the oil market.
Yeah, I think it's fairly alarming too, those three factors that we just kind of pointed out there. And one of those is the IEA's underperforming on or undershooting what the demand metrics are going to look like in the future. So they nailed that, they've had a track record of missing the mark on that. You know, and then we also see these decline rates that could be what you just kind of elaborated on, a potential 5 million barrel decrease in production. And then on top of that, what we just talked about with the Fed and how that inflationary marker could continue to affect these shale producers. We've already seen that in the last 5 years. They've operating costs have expanded tremendously, making it harder for these guys to break even on their production. You know, all three of those three things together, that could potentially box out the U.S. production a little bit more, and it could paint a picture for your of those three things of, you know, 2027 having some really alarming oil production measures that we could run mm-hmm. into, and then cost higher pricing. So I don't know if we see that in 2026 where it starts really flaring up, but we both kind of think that the market is going to be weak going into the winter and then potentially going into the first couple quarters of 2026. But beyond that, that could really, you know, like I said, knock out a lot of the production in the U.S. and then obviously overseas as well, especially for those high break-even producers. It's going to start pushing those guys out of the way. And then now we've got ourselves a problem with, you know, more short on oil.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, it's going to kind of change. And you kind of see this by where some of the big majors are kind of putting their money. They're looking at kind of shifting towards more like offshore in Guyana, yeah. Brazil.
Lower break-evens.
Yeah, lower break-even areas. And I think it's just going to make, perhaps, like you said, perhaps U.S. shale is going to take a step back in its production and kind of not be as big of a marginal player in the market, perhaps. But, you know, we wouldn't be the first to say that and then be proven completely wrong. So
definitely
another sign there of kind of the hurdles that that shale producers have had to go through.
Definitely. I just think that, you know, overall long-term picture, I would say in the next 3 or 4 years, I would say I'm bullish from an oil standpoint, but short-term, meaning in the next 6 months, I remain bearish. So that's kind of where my head is. I don't know about you, but I think that's a good place to leave us off at. I did want to give you a shout out. Alex is having an Outlook next week. I think this episode should be out by then. Do you want to plug that real quick?
All right. So on September 25th, Thursday at 2 p.m., I'm going to be doing a webinar Outlook specifically on crude oil and refined products. 2 p.m. Central Time. There will be a link in the show description as well for those of you to attend. It is free. We like to do these basically on a quarterly level, and it kind of outlines a little bit more of what we talked about today and having a more kind of illustrations regarding what we think of the upcoming quarter ahead. So feel free to join us. It's completely free, and we'll kind of outline Outlook what in a quantitative spirit what we're doing than what we're doing in this kind of conversation here. So thanks everybody, we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hose, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform for insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter. Email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time. We'll be right back.